Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hi, everyone. I want to welcome to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we're in the Cafe Book Club. We are in the fifth invitation of the five invitations of being able to discover what death can teach us about living fully. And, boy, this is, again, another great segment that we've got going on here with the beginnings of the fifth invitation. It's about cultivating the don't know mind. And I'll go ahead and get our co-host, Miss Amy. How are you tonight? Do you know? Amy, do you know?
Who are you? What? And what are we talking about?
I don't know mine. Very good.
I'm very confused.
You have to be careful with that because my thing was like, you know, are you have amnesia? Is there Alzheimer's creeping in? What's going on? Okay.
Or is it the reptilian brain?
Into something like that going on.
Right. Well, honestly, you know, and the topic today is going to be really good because it talks about, you know, being there for people, right? When they're confused, mm-hmm. when they're concerned, they have many memory issues. And honestly, mm-hmm. I don't know about you guys. I'd love to hear your take on this. But with all the stress that's going on, not only mine, but all these other people I'm dealing with, it does affect, you know, being in a state of clarity. So being confused as opposed to clarity and remembering things.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love to bring Miss Elena coming on. And what do you think about that?
Hey, I'm always wondering what's next. Where am I? What am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
So,
who am I?
Mm-hmm. I think that mm-hmm. I'm down with some clarity. I'm doing good.
That's good.
I'm ready for some
yeah.
clarity on this topic. I love this chapter. Not my favorite. Still love it, though. And
mm-hmm.
Enjoying
as underlined as some other ones that we've talked about. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah. I've listened to it a couple of times on audiobook, and it's really nice to listen to it. And Frank's, you know, hearing it audibly spoken is pretty nice. You know, just that you get the inflection, you get to really digest it in a different way. So I enjoy this chapter.
I haven't done that. That would be good to think. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great suggestion to, you know, go one more time with it. And really help, really invite yourself to be able to, you know, hear it as opposed to read it. Because that's really true. We can really kind of come from a different place when we're coming from all that. So, so just a little bit of a theme about tonight. It's about cultivating your don't know mind. And in the Zen traditions, they call it the beginner's mind. And it's really coming from this complete way of openness in looking at life and what's in front of you. And I love it, too, because it's called a practice of intimacy, of being able to come from that place, of being able to look at things in a way that can really support you and help you to have just a new way of looking at it. So, Amy, did you want to share something?
What came to me as you guys were talking is I think it's really important to not be as confused is when you take it in from the sense that works for you. You may need to see it and or hear it and maybe just kind of be with it and allow yourself to feel it. You know, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a technique that you use a different sense, like to hear what you're eating or to taste
mm-hmm.
music. And so I think that's kind of interesting thinking about and in order to get to clarity, making sure that maybe you're trying a sense that you feel comfortable with or maybe trying one you don't to see things in a different way.
Yeah. So in the intro part of it, he says, when we enter a situation with a don't-know mind, pure willingness to do so, without attachment to a particular view or outcome, we don't throw our knowledge away. It is always there in the background, ready to come to our aid should we need it. But we let go of fixed ideas. We let go of control. The Don't Know Mind is an invitation to enter life with fresh eyes, to enter our minds and open our hearts. I really love that. So with that, I want to go ahead and we're going to be doing the Flower Power Wisdom, which is some insights. And at the first episode that we did with the show, thanks to Elena, was, you know, just different kinds of stuff. And I thought of really wanting to talk about color. And, you know, I own Flowers for You in Riverside, California. And what's been really interesting, I think, because we've been doing the show for, what, 6 weeks, something like that, going through the different chapters. And at the beginning of it, white was a very popular color with bouquets. And then you could just imagine all the flowers were white. That's what people wanted, and it was really interesting for just all kinds of reasons. It was very interesting. It wasn't necessarily for any particular occasion that people wanted them. It just seemed like, you know, the thing that they wanted. And now it's moved to purple, and that's been basically for a week or so. And so I've been really kind of just mindful about that and watching what's happening with that. And I tuned in with the Flower Power Wisdom on that, and I really love to share some of the things that came out of that. And the first thing that really came to my mind was thinking about, just like with a color wheel, that red and blue create purple. And if you look at the dynamics of the colors, red is all about passion and vitality, and it's about new action, being able to move something forward in a grounded way and having a feeling kind of confident. You think of, like, you know, the red tie or whatever when it comes to business and things like that. It's being able to have that sense of, like, I'm a doer and I move things forward kind of thing. And if when you think of blue, blue is very much about communication and coming from this place of a wisdom and a confidence with stability. And being able to have that peace that just goes beyond understanding. And, you know, think about true blue when it comes to having a sense of being able to have a sense of somebody, of their integrity and who they are. So if you took those different levels of vitality and passion and with the red and then the communication and the depth and the trust with the blue and transforming that and having that mixed together to bring you into the purple, there's this whole new way of imagine just kind of like having it being put into a glass or something and lifted it up, and it becomes this beautiful purple color and just rises because of the two of them coming together. And it's all about inspiration with spirit, you know, to feel inspired. You know, it really is that it's an invitation for our magic of choice when it comes to being able to connect to a new level of my passions, a new level in the way I would commute. It's about speaking and thinking and knowing, which is a new sense of clarity, focus, and function. So I really just love that, you know, what came to me was about, it's about moving from I wish to moving to I create and doing it in a very inspired, and it's just like, you know, when you get that idea and you start working on something and time just seems to just disappear. And when you go back, you look, you know, three or four hours later, you come out of it and you've had made this creation of thing. It just seemed like time stood still. You couldn't believe how much you were able to just do something. And then you just really lost a sense of time when you're working on something that can be really something wonderful in the way that you just got into this moment of creating, you know. And it's about being able to have this positive impact in the way that you're bringing those different combinations of expressions together with the colors. So it really, I just love the idea of purple and just the depth and the spirituality and all the things that it really brings from a sense of vitality that also is inviting fulfillment. And I think invitation is really the word that we want to use, because it's an invitation to excel into a new way beyond the way that I've known myself. It's an invitation to go further in a mindful way and have it be where in traditions they call it your, instead of the karma of having the interaction with each other, you can move into dharma. And dharma is when you're really coming from this place of I'm doing what I love, and I'm being called to do that with my life. And it's helping me to be expanding and deepening in myself in a way that I had not even imagined. But yet it's just so right, because it's just me expressing myself in more deep and profound ways. So really just want to invite everybody to play with purple. Take a look at it and, you know, even maybe have your red and your blue and then move into a purple and see how that feels for yourself. And, you know, having it, wearing it, buy some purple flowers, see how that feels. And, you know, the color is really fun because you can get into food and all kinds of stuff, too, that really can impact your energy and really move you in a different kind of way. So wanted to get Amy and Elena back on here. So what do you think about that, Amy?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm thinking, so I would want to go maybe get a bouquet that has red, blue, and purple flowers in it.
You could do that, but I think it's really important to each to experience each one on their own and see how they feel for you. Yeah.
Then I know you
And then are you
flowers.
You attracted more to pastel colors, the lighter colors, or do you really want to be going into the deeper colors? I think that's a really interesting thing, too, of like what feels right for me and how do I want to move in, into those different, you know, aspects of color.
Cool.
How about you, Elena?
I love the way that you're talking about it's bringing these two energies together, two different concepts together to make something. And I think that's you know, where we're at right now. It's just, you know, melding two different ways of thinking, two different ways of living, two different ways of just everything in my life. It feels like it's two different, you know, and trying to bring them together to meld them into something. Because I definitely love purple more than I love just blue or just red, you know, just having them together, especially at a gradient, on a gradient. That feels really good.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Well, in your work, too, that you use colors, well, both of you do, but with the graphic work you do and that, is it, you know, different shades, right, of the reds and blues and purples. You're doing that to be expressive, not only for yourself, but also for your clients. Interesting.
Yeah, just the impact of all those different dynamics with them together, the way that a purple is going to be an impactful thing, like on the page, as opposed to using a red or a blue, that kind of thing, too. So it's really interesting because there's a whole psychology and an energetic experience that we have when we're really working with colors in different ways. So there you go, Mr. Purple. And I think purple really came in because it's a matter of I got drawn to one page that I wanted to talk about. You know, it's about let me go back to that. And it actually is not in the chapter. It's in a different section of the book, but I got drawn to that. You know, sometimes it's interesting to just kind of go where you're led. So I think, you know, it's about, you know, welcoming everything and pushing away nothing is neither a foolish nor ideal invitation. On the contrary, it's immensely practical. Accepting life as it is, the way that we make peace with things as they are, rather than trying to force them into be the way that we want them to be. You know, and if we're coming from that place of acceptance and coming from the don't know mind, we're in that whole place of being in a place of just, I don't know what this moment is, but I'm accepting it. And I, you know, and being curious about, you know, what is here for me? There's a really great story in this section that talks about a teacher that does meditation, and he's dealing with Alzheimer's. I think it's Alzheimer's or dementia. But he's a wonderful teacher with the Buddhism and all that. And at one point, he doesn't realize where he is. And he works himself to where he's still communicating. He's still talking about how he feels until he moves into a place of where him recognizing where he is again. And everybody really, they stood up and gave him a standing, you know, ovation, because he was just so present with the don't know mind and being able to express that to everybody that was there, that it gave them that confidence of being able to dance with it and to see what it was like for someone else that they could embrace it themselves.
And let's throw in the mix here, John Kabat-Zinn, and his work Full Catastrophe Living, which is really one of the beginning works of mindfulness. Gosh, probably 30 years ago, him working with doctors and nurses and people who have chronic pain, and it was a 12-week training program which I did, and I, you know, Robin, you and I have talked about it. But one of the exercises, I hadn't planned on talking about this, but the whole beginner mind is the raisin meditation. Elena, have you ever done that?
No.
So, no. So this is great to do with your kids. So I did this with Robin's daughter, Katie, when she was relatively young. And what you do is you take a raisin, and it could be something else, but, you know, some kind of fruit, you know, vegetable or fruit or whatever. No, it has raisins is the best, but something, you know, like that. And what you do is you pretend you're from another planet and you've never experienced a raisin. And so what you do is you look at it, you roll it around, you know, you be with it, and then you put it in your mouth and you let it sit there and be for a little bit, kind of roll around your tongue. And then, I mean, you can just take this on for a long, long time. And then when you chew it really, really slowly. And then what you do is you grab a handful of raisins and just throw them in your mouth like you normally eat them. So you see the experience of being mindful with this raisin and then doing it the way you did it. And it was really with Katie, one thing that she did I'd never seen anybody do is she listened to the raisin. She rolled it around, put it next to her ear, and listened to it before she ate it. I thought, well, that was really, really interesting. So that's really what the whole essence, I think, of beginner mind is coming at it from different senses and looking at things and experiencing them in ways that you've never done. So I think that'd be really fun to do, you know, with your kids, add to their school program, like a little bit of mindfulness.
Yes, definitely.
It's like, you mean I can't eat it? What?
It's really fun to watch that experience.
You know, and Amy says you could use different kinds of stuff, but I found that with the raisin, the fact you left it in your mouth, and then when you did bite it, the amount of flavor that was in that raisin was amazing. It was just amazing.
We did that with chocolate, some dark chocolate the other day.
Chocolate would be good. Yeah, chocolate would be good.
Chocolate, you could do chocolate. That would be good. Yeah, something that, you know, on the surface, until you actually bite into it, it's not going to give you all the different flavors and everything that you could experience with that. But, you know, I mean, you could do that with a lot of things. You could do it by paint, you know, with playing with paint or something like that, different kinds of colors and just different kinds of things that would do.
Don't eat your
paint. Taste is such a powerful thing. Yeah. Such a powerful thing to be working on that. So, so that was really good. And also, too, go ahead, Amy.
Well, I'm just saying, I think the whole point of this section, for me anyway, was when we find ourselves or somebody that we're connected to that is in that state of confusion or forgetfulness and they're in fear, right? And how do I be present with them and myself in a way that gets us all calmed down to really be present?
Yeah, there's a really wonderful story about people that are with people who have dementia, and they, in some ways, because of their not really remembering what it could be like for their experiences, they negate a lot of what's happening in front of them. One thing Frank Pick talked about, he says, remind them that we all are always forgetting. Our memories are constantly being rewritten and memory fails. He says, this is a part of the process of being alive. Best then to focus on remembering what matters most, not the details or dates of conversations, but that we are loved and that we are capable of loving others. So I just think it's so important to, it's that whole thing of putting myself in somebody else's shoes. Even I can possibly try to, you know what I mean? Not necessarily that it's going to happen, but being able to be in that place. Because one of the stories is about a woman who was, you know, curled up in a fetal position, and they were thinking that she, you know, didn't really know what was happening with her. But along with that, too, is like, you know, what kind of care, what kind of experience is she having, and having a sense of being able to be in a place where there could be possible comfort that could come from that. I think one thing, too, that came up for me through some of these stories was about the shaman mind, and we talked about that on a few different shows, because one of the things it talks about in the shaman traditions is that when you are a teacher, you don't answer any more than what is asked. So when it comes to the way that when there, one of the stories was about a woman that she had gone into a Zen hospice, and come to find out that she had resigned herself to go there because she was no longer being able to take care of her husband. And she'd done that all of her life. She just always wanted to be in the same response. And then Frank was wonderful. He basically just asked her a question, what kind of questions are you, can you ask her? And he really asked her about, what was that about? Because she wanted to, being able to express her feelings and all that. And this floodgates came through for her that really helped her to be able to inquire about her questions, about assumptions that she had about who she should be and what she did and didn't do with her life. And the sweet thing from that was she decided to go back to her home where her husband could take care of her. And they swapped, the way they had been all of their lives. And she finally got to be taken care of the way she'd always been taking care of him. And I didn't think that would have happened if you weren't really willing to be able to ask a question and to see someone being able to come from just a different place when they come from the I don't know.
Well, I love that. It's about being able to ask questions and then step back from them and allow it to unfold, which is can be challenging.
Yeah,
I love these examples that he gives in this section about the story of forgetfulness. Really helps you empathize and see things from a different perspective. Especially, we've known people who have had to, we've known people closely that have had family members with dementia, and we always think, oh, how hard it is for them, right? Not just for them, but for the person with dementia. But we usually focus on the person without, as they deal with all the things that come along with that. But I love that his perspective was just to he doesn't assume anything, and he asks these questions. He asks questions instead of just making assumptions and then acting or taking away their agency, their choices. He did everything he could to help them still have their own choices. And I think that's so respectful. And it made me realize, there's so many times in our relationships where we make assumptions and we take away the choices of other people by assuming, but whenever you just stop and you ask the question first, like why are you saying that? What is it that you're thinking? Or just completely come at it from a whole nother angle, you'll learn. You have that, you get that, you're open to another experience rather than what you have made up in your own mind. And so I just love that about this whole section.
Yeah, and it really goes into the whole thing about being open to stories. And he also talks about how stories are such a powerful thing for everybody. One story was about this young man that showed up at a hospice, and he was guided to go in and talk to the people, and come to find out, this guy had green and purple hair and tattoos on his arms, piercings in his nose and his cheeks and all kinds of stuff. And they were just like, well, how's this guy going to fit into anything? But they wound up saying, hey, let's have him go to the hospice. And what the young man did was he wanted to make films about everybody's, stories. And he took the time to go to all these different places that the patients had shared about. And then they winded up having a movie night where they could see all the different stories. And boy, it just came alive for them being able to do that. He says stories are a way we find meaning, but rarely a single meaning. Usually there are layers of meaning. Maybe things are this way, but maybe they're not. This is where we don't know can help us understand ourselves and each other. When we are not so fixed on our views and stories, and can take us on journeys past plot lines and even facts to reveal the truth that we may have missed when we were only looking for our ordinary mind. Most real life stories don't have clear beginnings and endings, but they do help us to make sense of life and embrace its mysteries. Through stories, we knit ourselves together as families, as communities, and as a culture, joining ourselves with a larger human story. And I thought that was just really, really, really good. So Amy's going to be guiding us in a mindful moment, and I think part of that's going to be about stories, right, Amy?
Yeah, and you both have brought so much to this table, and with this mindful mindset moment. And Alana, when you talked about the bringing two different things together and seeing them in a different way, that's really what happened for me, and this alchemy of bringing storytelling and silence together. And so what mm-hmm. came to me with being with that is when, especially when you want to create that space for those questions and the answers to unfold, and you want to be able to, I think it's really important to remember that just because you know something doesn't mean you need to share it, right? And that can be really challenging mm-hmm. because you think, oh, this would be really helpful. But it's a matter of, okay, am I willing to really stop and listen to guidance before I share something? Just because it might be the truth or it might be helpful, it might not be too. And do we have the courage to stand with it? And then, and with just storytelling, it's a very important thing in terms of communicating, because stories help us remember things. And like you were saying, with them doing the young man coming in and getting their stories, and so they were able to remember parts of their lives, and the other people got to see them in new ways. I mean, how cool is that? And stories tend to help us. It's another way of hearing. And so for a lot of people, storytelling really helps us to communicate. And one thing that's really fascinating with stories, that it activates our mirroring neurons. And what those are is when I hear a story about something, my system starts moving towards compassion. And if I hear about somebody who's wounded or somebody in help, my neurons start kicking about what can I do, how can I help. So storytelling is a really wonderful thing, but it needs to be balanced with that listening. And I think that's really a fine art. So one of the things that I used to do a lot of work with hospice volunteers, and one of the things that I would teach them is how to be with a person who's dying. And we've talked about this before, we're all dying. And one of my favorite techniques is using silence. And what you do when you do that is you get yourself really centered, maybe take three nice deep breaths, get yourself nice and calm, and make eye contact with the person or not. You know, you don't want to do that if a person doesn't feel comfortable, and you can tell when people feel comfortable or not. So make that contact, be present with them. You know, good technique is if they're sitting, set. If they're standing, stand. Get yourself positioned with them. That makes people feel more comfortable. And then really listen from that heart-centered space. Listen with your ears and your eyes and your heart and all your senses, and really be there for a person. And really practice, how can I really be silent in a connected way? Not in a, I'm separate from you, but I'm connected. And then what I want to support all of us in doing is maybe taking 30 seconds or at least a few seconds before you interject with a story that you think might be helpful, and giving yourself that space to really be present with somebody. And then if you feel like, oh, I need to share something, then maybe do that. So I want you to practice being silent. A homework assignment I used to get when I taught at University of Phoenix, for in communication classes, was get a buddy that's going to work with you for the next month. And what you do is you literally set a timer for 2 minutes. One person listens. That's their job, is to listen. And the other person talks about whatever's real for them. And then when the timer goes off, you cut it, and then you turn it around. And what I guarantee you, whoever that person is you pick, that relationship will change. I can't guarantee how it will change, but I guarantee it will change. So that, I think, can be really powerful, becoming a really good storyteller married with becoming a really effective listener, really being in that silence in evoking that beginner's mind.
Yeah, thank you, Amy, for that. And then I've experienced that with some of the classes and stuff that I've done too with Amy. And I know for me personally, in some support groups and stuff that we've gone to with women and stuff, we've you know, worked with that exercise. And it's amazing, you know, you think, oh, 2 minutes, what can I say in 2 minutes? But you can say so much in 2 minutes. when you're very clear and you know you get to the point when you're, especially if you're taking the time on for a whole month of, you know, what do I really want to share right now? You can get really clear about that pretty quickly, especially if you've done it a few times. It can be very empowering for you to just kind of have a sense of yourself and what you want to share.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Elena, anything for you?
Yes. No, I love that. That's an exercise that, you know, they give you in marital counseling sometimes. It's mm-hmm. We don't really sit down and listen as a couple. We had so many kids, we're running around. And mm-hmm. it was great for us to have, they said, we had to sit and look at each other and speak to each other for 5 minutes, you know, and at the mm-hmm. end of the night. And so, and just review our day or whatever it was, you know, just but like 5 minutes of active, you know, active listening, you know, just listening and listening. And then the other one spoke, you know, you couldn't comment on what they were saying. You just had to listen. And sometimes it was so hard to not comment and not make, have to offer opinions or solutions or, it's so, you're just so used to, you know, it's your first reaction to comment. And so, it's nice whenever, it's really nice when you finally master that to be able to just listen.
It's so freeing.
Mm, so good. Yeah.
So freeing.
It's so freeing.
So I hope you guys take
note,
our listeners, take this gift for yourself and somebody else that you want to maybe be a little closer to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, and it takes some time. So speaking of reaching out and communicating, we would love for you to come over to our Facebook page with Transformation Cafe and be a guys chatting in the community. Love to see if there's anything you'd like to share on that. So next week we're going to talk about not knowing is most intimate. And I think we're going to be moving into that and talking about that as well. So we're looking forward to that. So it says, you know, wisdom tells us I am nothing. Love tells me I'm everything. Between the two, my life flows. It's a beautiful quote. So you guys have a great week. And be spending time with the book. And thank you so much. And be able to be coming from a great listening place for everybody. So thank you, ladies.
Thank you. It was really good. I enjoy you both.
Thank you.
All right, you guys. All right. Have a great week.
Take care.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.